Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey everybody, I'm Tim Mitra. I'm doing a new series of podcasts with video support, and this first episode I had the pleasure of talking to Melissa Cash and Ryan Cash, who are the folks behind the Pock Pock Playroom and Snowman apps such as Alto's Adventure and Alto's Odyssey. Yeah, so I had a great time talking to them, and sit back and enjoy.
Are you like in your, you're at home, I assume?
I'm in my basement, yeah.
Cool. And you're in Toronto, right?
I am, yeah.
Wait, which part of the city do you live in?
I live in Riverdale. Where are you guys?
Oh, cool. I live in the beach, and Ryan lives in, he lives at like Queen and Spadina. We're siblings, by the way, not husband and
wife.
Oh,
okay. Sorry. Oh, it's good.
Oh, that's okay.
I didn't know that.
We actually get that a lot.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. It's, so Pock Pock is literally, for all intents and purposes, a sister company of Snowman.
Oh, cool.
So it's just, we make that joke because like we're brother and sister, but, okay, cool. And I run things at Pock Pock, and Ryan obviously runs Snowman.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like a running joke in our family.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing you actually will just roll with this. I kind of got a sense that there was some, I was wondering why there was some difference between Pock Pock and Snowman and that kind of stuff. Right. So, but that it does explain it for me.
Yep. Yeah. We incubated the idea for Pock Pock at Snowman for a couple of years.
Okay.
And then we decided to spin it off into its own company. So, sure. We're actually not even technically sister companies in the traditional sense, but, you know, we like to say that because we are siblings, but,
right. Yeah.
So we officially launched Pock Pock in May, like both as a studio and then also Pock Pock Playroom, which is our first product.
Cool. I mean, this year is a very different year than other years in that I've been to WWDC a number of times, and you know, I've attended the Apple Design Awards, and I've seen people go up and, you know, get presented, and they do a whole big spiel, and they show the app, and they talk about what they tell the audience what they like about it. And of course, they did that this year by video, but I was at 2014, I think, and my friends from Toronto were there, and they were kind of, you know, skirting around going, oh yeah, we're just in town for a thing, and and sure enough, I'm sitting there in the front row, and they walk up on stage, and I'm like, oh my god, they won an award, right? So it's you know, kudos to you guys for winning awards. They're not given out lightly. Like Apple really does pay attention, a lot of attention to who they select and how they select them, right? So
thank you. Yeah, we're super excited to win for Pock Pock Playroom, especially because it was so immediate after launch. It was the perfect,
yeah,
you know, boost in terms of like our team, right, and obviously in the press, and we were just so flabbergasted and excited, right. And yeah, it was a good day.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah. So have you been working from home forever, or is this a COVID thing for you?
Well, it's kind of complicated. I mean, it started out, you know, I worked traditionally, had different jobs like that, but around 2005, I kind of, you know, wanted to leave the company I was at. So it was kind of, I feel I was forced into starting my own company. So I did a managed services company for a while and did, you know, web development, stuff like that for people. And then eventually, you know, when the iPad came out, one of my customers called me and said, and I've told this story 1,000 times, apologies to my listeners, but she said, I have to be on the iPad on launch day. And I went, oh, okay, sure, no problem. And then I hung up the phone and I went, okay, now what do I do? So I put together a studio and at home, and my idea was to sort of do a sort of same sort of thing, to build a studio that would build apps. And we did pretty well for a few years. And then, you know, what this thing called the indie apocalypse happened, which, you know, some people would know mm-hmm. what that means. It got really hard to make a living as an independent developer. So I went and started working for a living. And so long story short, yes, I did work for 10 years from my house. And then I work for a major bank here in Toronto as a dev manager. And I was a senior developer before that. And, but yeah, since COVID happened, we've been sitting at home. Right. So, and thankfully, you know, I already was used to the sort of the cadence of, you know, being disciplined about getting up in the morning and, you know, desk at 9 o'clock in the morning and stuff. So yeah, that's worked out for me. How about you? Have you?
That's good
for you, or
oh boy, it's a garbage truck backing up outside. Of course,
that's okay. We live in Toronto; people can get used to that.
This is life, right? Especially working from home. Yeah, we have a studio in the city that we share between like Snowman and Pock, and we have been working from home since the start of COVID. So we've barely been in there. But to be honest, for me, it's been kind of nice because I live in the beach, so I'm really happy, especially in the summer, to be working at home. I can go for like a quick swim at lunch, and sure. I'm very spoiled. But I do really miss the in-person work, and I know our team is just itching to go back, but of course we want to do it as safely as we possibly can. So we're still in the process of navigating those waters, and we're really optimistic and hopeful we'll be able to go back soon. So it definitely takes a toll on some creative collaboration, especially I think in an industry like ours, where we're used to, for a project like Pock, like sitting on the floor and playing with old toys and getting our hands dirty, and doing that over video chat is definitely not the same, but we've tried to make the best of it, and our team has done a killer job, and I don't think we've had any, you know, catastrophic disasters from being at home. I think if anything, we've all learned how to be better communicators and work together in an even stronger way. So there are lots of silver linings, but of course we're all like, I can't wait to get out of my house, honestly.
Yeah. So, I mean, so did you, when you guys were like, did you start Pock at the Snowman office, or did you like, were you, so you guys were going in designers and coders and all that kind of stuff together?
Yeah. So how it started is because we had, so I'm Ryan's sister. So there's that connection. And then two of the artists who used to work at Snowman and now work at Pock, Matthias de Macht and Esther Hoybrecht, they're both in Belgium, actually. And they were artists at Snowman and had just given birth to their second son. And they already had a 2-year-old. They came in one day, they came to Toronto and showed us some early scribbles of an idea that they'd had to make a digital storybook for their kids. You know, as millennial parents, they wanted their kids to have a healthy relationship with their iPad, but not, they weren't really able to find anything that they felt really comfortable sharing with their kids, because they were looking for something that just didn't exist yet, which was a type of creative, open-ended play that empowered kids to think outside the box and think for themselves and really like explore the world. And so I had just actually wrapped up several years working at Disney in Germany. I had moved back to Toronto. I was visiting Ryan at the Snowman office, and one thing kind of led to another. I saw the work, Ryan and his co-founder Jordan saw it, and we were all like, oh my gosh, this could be something much bigger than a digital storybook. And we spent about a year just kind of soaking on it. Like Matthias and Esther worked on sketches in their spare time. They made a little prototype for their 2-year-old, which was really cute and janky. And I went off and had another job. And then it was really the thing that I would think about when I used to wake up in the morning, and I knew we had to do it. And Ryan and Jordan were really confident in the idea, and obviously Mateus and Esther as well. So we decided, like, okay, let's stop everything else that like three of us were doing. And we quickly decided to start working on PocPoc. So we kind of took a little corner of the snowman office and turned it into a PocPoc corner and started working. And naturally, a bunch of the folks at Snowman were a huge part of it. And for several years, we were just kind of in secret working on this new idea and playtesting extensively with kids and families and schools and trying to figure out what this would become. And then it grew into PocPoc Playroom. So that's how it all started. And now it's just still kind of this like crazy creative roller coaster where we're constantly in the mix, learning from kids every day and just realizing how damn smart they are. And how interesting it is to design and develop products for this demographic that previously none of us had really worked on in a technical space. Like I worked on it in a physical product space at Disney, but before that, it was very much like the snowman genre, which is just premium, beautiful, wonderful games for everybody. So it's been an adventure.
So I wanted to ask though, did you bootstrap the project, or was it what I'm looking to do with this podcast is sort of talk more like my other podcast is called More Than Just Code, because you know, it's not just code, right? It's design, it's storytelling, it's all that kind of stuff. So, and the other side of it is marketing and business. And so how did you like, did you quit your jobs as, you know, or did you turn your, like you obviously had a gainfully employed before this, right? how did you manage to get through that couple of years where you're just, you know, just working and testing and playing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, we're really grateful for being collaborators with Snowman. So yeah, we frankly leaned on the Snowman team for many of those things, not only, you know, our livelihood, but also the ability to talk to wonderful people in the space who we wouldn't have otherwise met. Right. And so we did bootstrap with the Snowman team. And it's been kind of an amazing ride. Like we're still very connected and we see ourselves as like one big family, and mm-hmm. we work in the same space and we share ideas and play test each other's products and really try to spread as much knowledge and creativity as we can.
Sure. Cool. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Ryan, finally.
Hey, sorry about the technical issues.
Well, you know what? I've been waiting years to talk to you, so this is okay.
Awesome.
As I think you know Tammy Coron, right? And anyway, we were hosting a show called Roundabout Creative Chaos, and we would often have guests on to talk about. We had, you know, developers and gamers. We had TV personalities and movie stars. Movie stars. We'll leave it at that. And we talk about different things about the whole creative process and that kind of stuff. And so we had a wish list of people we wanted to put on the podcast. And you were one of my wish list people. Unfortunately, Roundabout Creative Chaos is no longer a thing. Tammy's taken a break from that. And so I thought, well, let's just, so great to meet you. I want to give you a bit of background too. Like, so, you know, on our show, we talk about, you know, the business of app development and, you know, as well as coding and design and stuff like that. And one of our back in, I think it was around 2014, we select a framework or an app or something that we were interested in. And one of my co-hosts picked Aalto's Adventure as his fave. And then of course, you know, we followed that along and we all fell in love with it immediately. And I heard a lot of good things from other pundits in the iOS community about how amazing the game was and how nice it was. And, you know, I'm a Tiny Wings fan too, by the way, I'm looking at your blog. So I'm familiar with the sort of the genesis or the start of the app. And, you know, so, and it was, and kudos to you are telling, Melissa that, you know, it's not easy to win an Apple Design Award. And I think you guys have done it a couple of times with Snowman, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've done two at Snowman and one at PocPoc so far, which, right. Yeah, it's pretty hard to believe.
Yeah, it's a great accomplishment. And you know, anyway, so we were just talking about PocPoc and the genesis of that idea, you know, I guess starting from a couple of sketches from your friends in Europe, right? So can we spend a little time talking about Snowman and how you guys got started?
Yeah, for sure.
And sure, just give me your origin story.
Sure. Yeah. So it's it always takes me a while to tell the story because I like to go way back. But It all kind of started when I decided to drop out of college. I was just taking general arts and science, and I liked the first semester, but the second semester, it was sort of the exact opposite. I didn't really like any of my teachers, and I wasn't really resonating with anything that I was being taught. And I had some personal things going on too in my life. And I just sort of said, you know what, I'm dropping out and I'm going to work full time for a year. And then I'm going to decide what I really want to do and then go back to school. And I think like something I always struggled with was a lot of the stuff I was interested in learning was not the stuff I'd be interested in doing as a career. Like I'm fascinated with space and with science, but I could never see myself in like working in those industries. So I was just sort of lost. And I, at the time I was working at a little toy store called Mastermind here in Ontario,
Great store,
which funnily enough, actually really came in handy later when we started working on PocPoc, just like all this, just growing through that, as a young adult kind of helped shape who I am, I think, which is a funny kind of callback. But I was working there and I was only working part-time and it wasn't enough hours. And I figured if I'm going to take a year off, I need to get more hours and earn a little more money. So I just applied to jobs all over the place. And back then it was really looking at our local newspaper called The Liberal and flipping through the classifieds in the back. This is in early 2007. And I applied everywhere from like, you know, big box stores like The Gap and Canadian Tire, TD Canada Trust, the bank, restaurants, and all over the place. And I was actually pretty close. I just kind of forgot about this part of the story, but I had an interview at TD and I was offered the job of like being a bank teller, which seemed like a bit of a step up from Mastermind in terms of pay and hours and stuff like that. But yeah, I got a call one day from a company called Market Circle, who I actually hadn't remembered applying to because I sent my resume out to so many people. And funnily enough too, I still have the original ad on how I got the job. And it was literally the size of like a small coin. And it just said Market Circle F/T sales and an email address. And I applied and it turned out that they were a Mac software developer that makes a product called Daylight for people to help run their small business. So I went in, or I had a phone interview, and then I ended up landing an in-person interview. And I went in and didn't really know like what the company was at the time. But I went in, and when I went to the office, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like there are people walking around with Apple laptops. You could just see like the glowing Apple, just kind of like pacing around the office. And I was like, whoa, this seems cool. Cause I was at the time, like the kind of person who would spend a lot of their personal time on a computer. But I never, you know, had done any work on a computer. I was always working like retail and things like that. So, the interview went well and I was offered the job of being a salesperson and I started pretty quickly. Someone was leaving for a maternity leave and they needed to replace her for the time being. So I joined the company in May of 2007, as a salesperson. And at the time the company was maybe around 10 or 12 people. I could be getting those numbers wrong, but I think it was around that.
Yeah, just want to, just as a sort of like, you know, things happen serendipitously for me as well. I mean, like, so I was telling Melissa that I used to do managed services. And one of the things I did was I helped people find software for their daily work. And so Market Circle and I and Daylight go way back too. I was at one point, awesome. Even a Daylight reseller, right? So,
oh, cool.
And I think I won a copy of Billings Pro and all that kind of stuff. So I know the founders pretty well. And my wife and I met them at a Macworld event that they hosted one year.
Awesome.
So yeah, it all comes around, right? So
yeah, that is really funny. Yeah. After the first year or so, I guess you know this part of the story, but often when I tell someone who isn't in the, you know, in the space, I have to add in.
We don't know. Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Yeah. So I'll add in like that was the year that Apple announced the iPhone. And so the App Store wasn't around yet, but I feel like AJ, CEO of Market Circle, and some of the other folks had a pretty clear indication that it was going to happen or there would be a way to make apps. So they sort of started looking into that. And then the App Store came out in 2008 and they ended up making Daylight for the iPhone, which was a huge undertaking. And then at some point after that, the iPad happened and making products for the iPad happened. And also the same with Billings, the product that you mentioned. And so the company kind of started growing pretty quickly. We moved to a new office and I think we went from 10 to 30 or so people, felt like overnight. I was like a wee kid, so I might have some of my memories mixed up, but it felt like we went from like 10 to 30 people in a few months kind of thing. And at the time I was in sales, and they kind of called me into a room one day and said, like, hey, what do you want to, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That kind of thing. And I kind of said, I don't know, like, I'm enjoying this. But at the time they had a woman who was doing marketing, and she was great. She had a marketing degree from school, but I think she hadn't really grown up on the internet in the same way I had. So looking back now, it's easy to see why they offered me the position, but they ended up seeing if I wanted to take over the company's marketing. And I think the reason was, like, as a salesperson, most of the sales were inbound. So people coming to our website and calling. And so I would look at our website and be like, oh my, like, this is, we need to improve this. There's so many things we could do here to make the website better, which will make my job easier as a salesperson, because we'll get better people coming in and they'll be more informed, and, like, we can, you know, have a better slogan on the website and that kind of thing. So they offered me that role. And so after the first year, I took over the company's marketing. And then about a year later, we had a PR company we were using, but I realized they weren't really doing much. So I kind of suggested we get rid of them and I take over PR. So I started doing PR, I think, sometime in my second year there. And I did, I ended up doing that for a total of 5 years. And along the way, I learned so much. I would never be doing what I'm doing now if it weren't for my time at Market Circle. I was so fortunate to work with incredible people. Like, so much talent comes out of that company. And so I kind of had these, like, unofficial mentors. And the first one was a guy named Adam Baker, but I only worked with him very briefly. And actually, all these people that I'm about to mention weren't actually, like, assigned to be my mentor. And we weren't even supposed to be working together. Like, we weren't in the same department. We weren't really in meetings, but we just sort of ended up hanging out or becoming friends at work. And it was sort of the thing where I would say, like, hey, I'm working on something, can you take a look? And all three of these people were designers. So the first was Adam Baker, and then he left to go to Google. And then it was Brandon Walken, who he designed Billings 3, which won the Apple Design Award. Then he went to Facebook for many years, and he's at Apple now. But I learned, he was kind of my first real mentor that made, like, a huge impact on me. And I just learned the importance of design and user experience and thinking about things through those lenses. And I think I was always naturally drawn towards it, because I was the kind of person who would complain that something was poorly designed. And I didn't really understand it as design, but, you know, I would go to, like, Cineplex to buy a movie ticket and be like, why is this screen so bad? And, like, why am I confused? Or what if I'm using an ATM, why is it not easier? And now that I kind of have learned about this stuff, I kind of understand it to be kind of design. And design isn't, I think when I was younger, I thought design was how something looks. And now I understand that it's how it works, really, that sort of matters most. So Brandon was a huge mentor for me. And then he left to go to Facebook. And then Jason had joined the company around the same time. And Jason became another huge mentor for me as well. And Jason actually now works at Snowman. So that's kind of really cool that we got to continue working together later on. But anyway, this is a long sort of precursor to the sort of main event. But yeah, I was working working on products and working on, I wasn't really working on the products at Market Circle, but I was involved in, like, the product marketing, even working on retail boxes, because those were still a thing at that time. And sort of just being there for the birth of the App Store from day one. And I even was lucky enough to be able to buy the first iPhone in Canada. I bought a jailbroken one off eBay.
Yeah.
and that was really cool, because, like, everyone, like, on the streets was like, what is that thing? I remember being on a bus going to work and pulling out my iPhone, and it was sort of like that thing of, like, an alien traveling to Earth with some kind of crazy futuristic technology, because back then Apple wasn't what it is today. And it's not like everyone knew about the iPhone. So people, like, hadn't even heard of it, and they were like, whoa, what is that? But as soon as I got the iPhone, was actually my very first Apple product itself. I never owned a Mac before joining the company. Once I started using Macs, I was like, wow, this is so much better than my PC at home. But I had an iMac at work, so I would still use my PC at home. But the iPhone was the first Apple product I owned. And then later I got a laptop at work and would take it home, and I kind of got rid of my PC. So I was around for the birth of the App Store, and I learned working with these designers, like, how important the user experience is to things. And at a certain point, like, I've always been kind of entrepreneurial minded. Myself and, like, my best friend growing up, Jordan, had websites together in high school. And we also had lemonade, or actually it was Kool-Aid stands when we were kids. And we're always like talking and scheming up like business ideas. Even when we were little kids, it was always like part of our relationship. So at one point, I think him and I were chatting and we're like, we should make an app. Like neither of us are developers or like, you know, trained designers or graphic designers. But that wasn't really going to stop us. So we kind of thought about it and we decided to start working on a camera app. I don't know, probably in like 2010, maybe 2011. And I guess this is something I don't usually mention, but yeah, we started working on this camera app because at the time, camera apps seemed to be doing really well in the App Store. I'm super into photography as a hobby. So it just sort of felt like a natural thing to try to do. But so I was working on it in evenings and I was just sort of sketching things out in a sketchbook. But all I was really doing was like looking at the default iOS camera app and then looking at like two or three other very popular camera apps and trying to just combine them. I wasn't actually solving anything. I didn't actually have a frustration with existing camera apps. I was just trying to make something so that we could make our own app. And so I think after a little bit of time, I kind of just burnt out on it and kind of, I guess, gave up because I was realizing like, I don't actually have anything here. I'm just trying to make something for the sake of making something. So yeah, I kind of abandoned that. And then at the time I was working there, I was also working at a restaurant part-time evenings and weekends for sort of a bit of a social life because all of my friends were away at college and university. And I was here working at a software company, which was great. And I had great friends there, but people were generally a bit older and more settled down. And so I wanted to like meet people my age. So I got a job at a restaurant. And around then, I think it was iOS 5 when Apple came out with Reminders. And being a developer, we got early access to iOS 5. And I ended up discovering like location-based reminders in Apple's Reminders app. And I fell in love with them because prior to that, I would set reminders for things, but they would always go off and I'd be in the wrong place. So it would say like, wash my work uniform for the restaurant, but I would still be at the bar with my friends. Or it would say, book off vacation time when you get to work. At a certain time, but I wasn't at work. So once I could use location-based reminders, I was in love. Because I had such a hectic life, it was like the second I walked in the door, hey, do your laundry. The second I walked into work, hey, book off this time and all that. So I loved using them. And then one day I remember I was just driving on Elgin Mills for any Ontario listeners. And I'm driving and somehow it just popped into my head. And I said, wait a minute, like everything I've learned from these designers and like my sort of unofficial mentors is about, you know, simplifying things and getting them down to the simplest form. And I realized Apple's Reminders app took 11 different steps to create a location-based reminder every single time. So not just the first time, but every single time. This is also, of course, before Siri. And I believe they announced Siri in the fall. So Siri did sort of solve some of that. But I immediately called Jordan and I said, hey, I have our app idea. Because he was still interested in teaming up on an app. It was just a matter of like us having a good idea. So I called him. I said, I got our idea. We met up that night. I explained the idea and we sat around a sort of living room table and we started sketching out the app idea that night. And it must have taken us 3, 4, maybe 5 months to design the UI on paper. And we design every single screen. So when you, even if you make a very simple app, like I guess more people probably know Reminders than Checkmark. But if you, even a simple app like Reminders or Apple Mail, you think of the view as having like one or two screens, but there are countless other screens for the settings and all these things. So we design every single screen. So it was, I don't know, maybe 20 different screens and the entire workflow, like what happens if you tap this button? What happens if you tap that button? And not being a designer, either of us made that a little challenging, but I had learned enough from my coworkers that I could kind of get away with it. And so we designed that app and then we needed a name for it, which was really hard to come up with for a while. Like at one point we were going to call it local because it was sort of like based on where you are, but we also did time-based reminders as well. And then one day I was probably driving and it just hit me, Checkmark, and really liked that name. So we went with that. And Jordan was the one who came up with the name for Snowman. So we wanted something Canadian sounding, but not too Canadian. We wanted something that was one word, no one could misspell, and that something that could be represented by a shape. So very much inspired by Apple in that way. And yeah, that became like sort of the birth of Snowman. And at the time I was still working at Market Circle for a little bit. But I kind of realized I would need to quit my job so I could really focus on this. So I left Market Circle in May of 2012, thinking we were going to launch Checkmark like a few weeks or a month later, but it ended up still taking quite a while. And so it wasn't until July 2012 that we launched it, but I think we started working on it about a year prior to that. So probably around July 2011 was when we first hit the paper with the pen. Yeah. And then Checkmark came out, and that was our first app. That's the sort of snapshot story on how we got started.
And so did Checkmark, I mean, again, taking the risk to sort of quit your job and all that kind of stuff. I mean, did that pay off, or was that something?
Yeah.
You must have had a few months where you were like, how am I going to put food on my table?
Yeah. Yeah. So the tricky part was leaving my job and thinking Checkmark was going to come out sooner than it did. So there was a little period there where I was enjoying my credit card. And I think also, I forgot to mention, but we also teamed up with a developer from Switzerland named Jonathan Moreira, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and a designer from Brazil named Marcelo Marfil, who currently works at Sketch. And they are both super talented people. And Jonathan's also a bit of a designer, or maybe a full-time designer now. So really talented people who also we learned a lot from. But that also meant that we had to pay them. So Jordan and I were kind of 50-50 splitting that. And Jordan had been doing other things, so he was still kind of earning money. And I kind of just had to take all the money I was earning and put it into Checkmark. Yeah, and I quit my job. And honestly, we had no plans beyond Checkmark to really make a company or a business. The idea was like, we're making this app. People are going to love it. Hopefully, we're going to sell a million copies or whatever. And then we were young, and I had no plans. It was just, hopefully this is going to make a lot of money, and then I'm going to go to Thailand for a month, and then whatever, I'll figure it out. But yeah, that didn't happen. We were lucky that I had a lot of relationships with the press from before at Market Circle. So we got decent coverage. We got a small feature in the App Store in Canada. And we were able to turn a profit on what it cost us to make. So that was better than, you know, losing all of our money. At the same time, the profit we made was nothing super significant. So it wasn't, it wasn't the Thailand money I had thought I was going to, you know, sort of see. And we kept going from there.
Cool. Yeah. I had a few apps that I did that got featured on Apple Canada. They're pretty good at supporting local talent for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, and the Tiny Wings kind of that was what got you guys thinking about Aalto's adventure
What happened, I'll try to make this a little quicker, but we were about to start working. Yeah. We were about to start working on our, Melissa's definitely heard this so many times. She's barely hanging in there. Yeah. We were about to start working on our second product, which was going to be this privacy storage box called Lockbox that actually Marcelo had come up with the design for, kind of actually heavily inspired by Windows 7, like the kind of flat UI. This is before when Apple was, that old design pre iOS 6, I believe it was, or maybe it was iOS 7.
Skeuomorphic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. iOS 6. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we were about to start working on it. And then Marcelo said, hey, wait a minute. This reminds me of this toy from the 80s. Sent a picture, and it was that toy Simon, which was that colorful square,
right.
The four different colors and sounds. And we all kind of went, oh yeah, it does look like that. And then we were kind of like, wait a minute, why don't we make that instead of this utility app? Because we already tried doing that, and this seems more fun. And also, this seems like the kind of like game that people like who have no idea about making games can make, because it's really just UI and sound effects. And we know how that toy works. So we're like, you know, let's do a digital take on a classic toy from the 80s and see how we can twist it in new ways that you couldn't do with a physical device, which again, funnily enough, now that kind of that description kind of fits with PocPoc in some ways. So yeah, we kind of said, hey, let's make this app instead. So that became Circles. And that was our first game that we ever made. And while we were working on Circles, Jordan and I said, okay, like, we don't know anything about video games. If we're going to be making one, like, we should immerse ourselves and learn. And Jordan and I grew up playing video games together. It was a huge part of our childhood, playing like the Tony Hawk Pro Skater series, playing Halo, and then playing Counter-Strike into high school. But both of us had quit video games because they were like a time waster and we wanted to, you know, make something of ourselves. So we gave up video games. And so it had been 7 or 8 years since either of us had played a video game, really. So we decided to dive in. We played a few things and Jordan turned me on to Tiny Wings. And that was the first time I really realized that games could be beautiful and calming and sort of simply games could be art. Before that, I just saw them as time wasters and generally like annoying cartoony graphics and songs that get stuck in your head, but not in a good way. And then I played Tiny Wings and I was like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful. This is gorgeous. I could leave. And I have left my phone open with just the music playing in the background I work or read or something. So that was my first experience with games as art. And then, but I didn't love the gameplay of Tiny Wings. Jordan really did, but I found it to be too particular. Like you had to be too particular with your movements. And I could tell that I could get into it, but I didn't have the patience to want to get better at the game really. And then a couple weeks later, I got really sick with the flu or something. And I was in bed for about a week and Jordan said, hey, check out this other game. And it was Ski Safari. And I started playing and I was like, immediately, this game is way more fun than Tiny Wings, but it's missing all the art aspects of Tiny Wings. Like I found the art to be like a bit childish and the music to be a little like grating. But like hats off to Ski Safari too, because it's a great game. It was just more of, it's more along the Angry Birds style than the Tiny Wings style. And so, I love that game. I had way more fun playing Ski Safari than Tiny Wings. And I was trying to compete with Jordan. I was like, hey, what's your high score? I bet I can beat you. And that was kind of the first like mobile game that I kind of really got hooked on, but I kind of couldn't help but think like a few things, like what if we, and it ended up being a combination of four things. It was this gameplay idea from Ski Safari, but kind of felt like the physics were a little cartoony as well. And then Jordan and I grew up skateboarding and snowboarding together. And that was like a huge part of our childhood. So I couldn't help but see the game through that lens and feel like things were missing. And also it's sort of like a cliche thing, but skateboarders and snowboarders are always like against the skiers. Like there's always like a bit of a rivalry there. So I couldn't help.
Former skier here.
I kind of couldn't help but think like, this is skiing and like, why am I not snowboarding? Like I want to be snowboarding. But it was also just like the physics and the terrain and different ideas for jumps and other mechanics that I felt like Jordan and I felt were missing. And then we had been inspired by Tiny Wings, this beautiful art and the beautiful music. And then I had happened to have met an artist named Harry Nesbitt in the UK, probably a year and a half before that, maybe 2 years before that. And we kept in touch. And for whatever reason, like when I thought of this game, I thought of Harry immediately and his art style. So I kind of said, like, if we can take some elements from Ski Safari, from Tiny Wings, from our childhood skateboarding and snowboarding and combine that with Harry's art style, we might have something really special here. So Jordan and I kind of sat down, we started sketching out all of our ideas again, how this game could be different. And then once we had enough kind of jot down on paper, this was in December 2012, we reached out to Harry, who I hadn't spoken to in a little while, and said, hey, we're working on a snowboarding game. Would you be interested in doing the art? And he was interested and said, like, if I can have like creative control to kind of experiment, that would be great. And we were like, sure, you're so talented. Let's see where it goes. And at the time too, we had found another developer to do the programming, which didn't end up working out. And Harry ended up taking over the development as well later on. And so we honestly had no idea what we were doing. We'd never made a real video game before. Like we had made circles, but it was just like UI and sound effects. So we just set off to work on it. We assumed it was going to take 6 months. It took 2.5 years. So much was on the line. And actually, before Alto came out, we also made a game called Super Squares. We made Checkmark 2, which was a follow-up to the first one that, you know, adopted iOS 7's design language. We made an app called Shifts for people who work shift work. And that was also an interesting lesson that we learned. But yeah, that's what kind of like led us to get into making games. And then finally, we launched Alto's Adventure in February 2015. And it did really well. And then from there, it was kind of like, okay, what are we going to do next? We had some updates to do to Alto. We wanted to bring it to Android eventually, just because there was so much demand for it. And because the game was built in Unity, it wasn't too much trouble to do that. And then we kind of ended up accidentally getting into a bit of a publishing business where we we don't consider ourselves a publisher. And it all started very organically with a friend who was making a game that he couldn't get anyone else to kind of believe in and to support his vision for. And I kind of, and we had gotten along really well and kind of said, I was like, hey, well, we're not a publisher, but maybe we can help you make your game. And that began sort of a series of those. But yeah, we kind of, we focus more on collaborating with people when we can, rather than just like, oh, someone made a game and it's done and they just need a distributor. So yeah, anyway, so that was in 2015 that Alto came out. And since then we've been making games and kind of collaborating with other people and, you know, spawning up new projects, which is what PocPoc was. And that sort of turned into its own company. Yeah. And I think like overall, like people often look at Snowman, we're obviously much more known for like Alto and our games than we are for Checkmark, but people will say like, oh, you're a video game studio. And I always say no, because at our heart, we're really just a group of people who like creating things. And if we're interested in making something and we feel like we can do it and actually contribute something valuable, then we'll make it. And we've also learned a lot of things along the way too. Like, don't just make something because you can and because there's a hole in the market. That often doesn't work out. And that's what happened with Shifts, for example. So yeah, we just sort of like, we're just sort of following our noses, I guess.
Well, I do have to ask though, what is the deal with the llama?
So that was Harry's idea. And it's funny because I don't remember, it was very early on, but he kind of, I don't know if he had put just the llamas in the game in the background first, or if he had created the character Felipe, who's one of the llamas that you're the llama that you can snowboard with. But at first, I kind of saw it and I was kind of like, a llama? Like, I hadn't envisioned that because as a snowboarder, I've never seen any llamas on the hill. But it was definitely really cute. But I was kind of like wondering if it fit, and maybe Jordan had the same reaction. But you know, we looked at it for a couple of days and kind of were like, yeah, like this is really cool. And if Harry's like on board with it and Harry loves this idea, then we want him to continue exploring it. And obviously, it became like such a huge iconic part of the game, and I think that's something like Harry really brought to the Alto series is the IP side of it, like the world and the story and the characters and the environment. I think we had envisioned his art style and snowboarding, but just I didn't really ever picture any likable characters. I just sort of pictured you're a person and you're on a snowboard and it's all about the beautiful environment. But Harry kind of worked his magic there and created this lovely cast of characters, one of them being Felipe the Llama. And yeah, now I couldn't ever imagine it any other way. And while we don't really like tell a story about Alto too publicly and in the game, I think there is like a really neat backstory. It's sort of subtle enough that people can imprint their own kind of impressions and thoughts on it. But yeah, it's cool. I'm staring off at my little, got one of these needle felt llamas that actually began as fan art. And then we commissioned the artist to make a limited run for some merch. But yeah, I couldn't imagine it any other way now. But it's funny how it wasn't like, oh yeah, we have to have llamas in this game. It was something Harry totally kind of created on his own.
Yeah, it's kind of like an Easter egg in a sense that way too. And you mentioned earlier that I know what you mean about the Angry Birds. Tiny Wings music, because mm-hmm. you're right, it is relaxing. But I noticed that you also released the soundtrack for Alto as well.
Yep. So in the original game as well, we only had one song. We had the main theme song, but after hearing a lot of feedback from people about how soothing and relaxing the game was, we decided to make Zen mode, which is the mode of Alto where you can't die. Like there's no sort of consequences or goals. It's just sort of a stripped down, simplified version of the game where you can just relax and unwind. And then we had a new composer create a song for that. And then it felt appropriate. So many people had asked for us to release the music. And I think like I had described earlier, keeping my phone open to listen to Tiny Wings, that works. But like, if you're just wanting to listen to music, there's probably a better way in 2021 or whatever year it came out. So we decided to get the soundtrack on like Apple Music and on Spotify. But even long before that, people had, I guess, ripped the music from the game and put it on YouTube. And it was something that never bothered us. We didn't want to go take those like file complaints and take them down, because if people are enjoying the music, that's fine. And even since then, we've had people do fan art covers of our music. So people have played it on piano, which is just so kind of surreal to see and beautiful. But yeah, we decided soundtracks made sense. And in the second game, Alto's Odyssey, we had both modes from the beginning. So we had like the core song and the Zen mode song. And in the latest version, Alto's Odyssey, The Lost City, Todd Baker sort of jigged some of the music and worked his magic. So it's kind of remastered and really interesting.
So is he the author of the music or?
Yeah. So the first song we ever had was by a man named Brian Crawford. And then the person who did our Zen mode music is Torin Borrowdale, and he's also the composer for Where Cards Fall. That's how we met him, through our friend Sam at the Game Band. And then for Alto's Odyssey, we worked with Todd Baker for the core music and sound effects. But then we brought Torin back to do the Zen mode music.
Sure. Cool. So why don't we switch gears and talk a bit more about Pock Pock and how you guys got helping Melissa on that too.
Yeah. So I don't know how much Melissa may have mentioned already, but Pock Pock started off as an idea from a husband and wife on our team, Matthias and Esther, who are both based in Belgium. And they brought an idea for sort of like a digital interactive storybook that they wanted to make for their kids because they couldn't find anything in the App Store that they felt good about giving to their kids. And they brought the idea to me back in December 2017, I think. Yeah, December 2017. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is totally beautiful. And again, kind of like Snowman we don't fit into, like, first we made productivity apps, then we make games. So like we had nothing to do with kids stuff at the time, but I was kind of like, this looks amazing. I don't know how this fits into what we're doing. And I don't know how this, you know, could go, but like, just keep me in the loop and let me know if you need anything from me. If you need some money for sound effects or I don't know, anything, like, let us know, like, maybe we'll help you and whatever, just keep in the loop. And then the more we kind of thought about it, the more we realized that this could be much bigger than just one interactive kids book, but this could actually be a suite of activities and toys and things for kids to do. And I think for a long time, this small idea ballooned into a bit of a bigger product idea. But then the more we thought about it, and of course, also once Melissa got on board and we started building a team, the more we realized that this is a company with a mission and with a goal and with some core values that could also do many different things, maybe sort of similar to the way Snowman does, but probably a little bit more focused in one general area, which is to kind of help raise the next generation of creative thinkers and inspire creative play, imagination, curiosity, open-ended play. And so, it was sort of like an idea that sort of first was started by two of our team members, and then later, you know, workshopped and talked about and discussed. And Melissa had just moved back from Germany and had been working at Disney as like the perfect person to sort of spearhead this kind of thing. And I don't know if Melissa mentioned, but we're brother and sister as well, and we decided to never work together.
But I didn't get into that
wise
yet.
Decision.
And, yeah,
very wise.
We've done it our whole lives though.
Yeah, and we worked at Mastermind together, and she worked at the same restaurant I worked at, but a different location.
It's a restaurant.
But
I worked there first, just for the
record. It was Turtle Jack's. She worked there first, and let the record show she wouldn't get me a job, but I got her a job at Mastermind and also at Snowman. We knew that it would go so well if we worked together. But my biggest fear was, and like the moment that I remember so clearly, was Melissa had been living in Cape Town for a few months in 2017. I went to visit her, and her and I went on a road trip in Namibia for about a week. And I remember it being such a nice break from work because we didn't work together. And I'm sure I talked about work a bit, but like in general, we weren't discussing work the whole trip. We were just having fun. And so when I thought about us ever working together after that, I was like, I don't want to lose that friendship, because that's already happened with my friends. So Jordan and I, the co-founders, grew up together, and business was always sort of part of our like friendship. But our other friend and roommate at the time, Andrew Schimmel, ended up joining our company and had the same problem where like the three of us previously were like best friends, always hung out together, but we never talked about work because only Jordan and I worked together and Andrew didn't. And like today he's a senior producer at the company, super invaluable to the team. But the one downside is if the three of us are on vacation, we inevitably start talking about work. And so luckily that's the worst it's gone, because people always say never work with your friends and your family. And honestly, we've had the exact opposite experience. It's been such a pleasure, and it's been great too, because we can take personal trips and also squeeze in work and stuff like that. But yeah, the goal was not to work together, but it just made way too much sense with Melissa's background and experience and her kind of passion for the idea. And when she first got, maybe it's better for her to tell the story, but she wanted to work somewhere and like do some good for the world. And I feel like this is really an important job, especially with the fact that kids are growing up on technology nowadays. And like we were the sort of last generation or so to grow up before computers and the internet, really. Like when I was a kid, I biked around the neighborhood. I didn't have a phone. I didn't really have a computer to go back to until I was a bit older. And I've always been worried, I don't have kids, but I've always been worried that like they're not going to have that sense of adventure and curiosity where you go through the forest and you make things up and you go on an adventure. And so we really think we have a big responsibility with PocPoc to, you know, like we want people to play PocPoc, of course, and interact with the products that we make. But we also want those products to inspire people to go outside and get dirty and roll around in the mud and go look for ladybugs in real life. And so, if we can do that, then we'll have done a good job. But yeah, that's sort of how PocPoc ended up starting within the company. And of course, like it's so hard to even explain Snowman sometimes, because we all wear so many different hats and people get involved in different projects and we collaborate with other studios around the world. But I think that's kind of a good snapshot.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting app because I have a granddaughter who's six, and I've had my grandsons here helping us with landscaping the last couple of weeks. He's 18. And, so we've had three kids that have grown up with square time, as my friend calls it. Right. and she, she limits the square time that her kids can have. I was talking with my co-host on More Than Just Code recently, and he was talking about, oh, arcade is great. You can get arcade and you can, and I pointed out to him, there are no kid games on arcade or no decent kid games on arcade. And iPads and iPhones are glorified babysitters after a while, right? Same as putting a kid in front of a Netflix cartoon, or sitting them in front of YouTube and then get barraged with commercials. So, thank you for giving me a copy of PocPoc. I did play around with it for, a little bit, and it's interesting. There's no menu. There's no, reading involved. And I remember when my daughter was, probably about five or six, she wasn't even reading yet. And yet she could use my Mac, because she could go in. And I would get up on Saturday morning and there'd be pages coming out of the StyleWriter jammed with stuff that she was printing from KidPix. I don't know if you remember KidPix.
That's awesome.
So tell me a little bit about what your idea, how PocPoc sort of has taken on that sort of new paradigm of and thinking how kids think, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great challenge. I think for us, we always wanted to build something that met kids at their level and respected them for who they were and the age that they were at. And so something we always loved growing up was Lego. Ryan and I played it a lot, and we loved the fact that you could do anything with it. So we always wanted PocPoc to be open-ended, and we knew that this was something really important to Esther and Mateus as well. And so once we defined this boundary of no boundaries, we knew like the sky was really the limit, and we didn't want kids to have to be busied and distracted by text or talking or menus or anything like that. And there were so many other alternatives out there where kids would be bombarded with almost like a narrator that said like, great job, like you matched, red and yellow and made orange. And while that is beneficial in certain ways for kids, we really wanted to just strip all of that down and show kids that they shouldn't be afraid to experiment and think outside the box and fail, because what is failure at a toddler's age anyway? I mean, they have so little autonomy to make real decisions in their day-to-day life. And play is really the only place where anything goes. And we wanted to bring that freedom of a real playroom into a digital world where kids could completely feel empowered and brave and creative without worrying about like, am I doing this right? Is the iPad going to crash? you know, what happens if I click on this? We wanted it to just be very much like a safe creative environment for them. And so it was really easy, honestly. We were just like, okay, well, there'll be no language, there'll be no text, there'll be no talking, there'll be no menu. And yeah, it'll just be toys. And so at that point we realized, okay, so now what are the toys? And naturally the digital storybook that Mateus and Esther had originally dreamt up was one that we all love, you know, like that busy book idea when you open a page to, you know, like a two spread book and you see like so many things. And we wanted to bring that sense of exploration to the digital space. And that's how we came up with our busy book toy, which is essentially a toy of tons of different icons that kids can tap and they'll animate very gently and make a small sound. And when that was how we got started. And they had been working on that already for a couple months before we even officially got started on PocPoc. And what we realized really early was like, we wanted the sounds to be super gentle and be very handmade. And if people always ask me like, how is PocPoc handcrafted? Like, what is this? Like some marketing term? I'm like, no, honestly, it's literally handmade. Like our sound designer, Matt Miller here in Toronto can be found anywhere around the city in his house. And, you know, who knows where, literally just recording things like apples and chopsticks and pine cones. And I've seen him record a blade of grass. And I'm like, you know, it's so beautiful. And that kind of handcrafted feel is really important to us. And it's why PocPoc Playroom took so many years to make. And people sometimes ask if this is like a COVID business. And it's truly not. You know, we started many years ago and it's taken so long because not only are we recording all of the sounds, but we're also hand drawing all the animation, which is like a flipbook style of animation that really no one is doing anymore because it's extremely painstaking, but it gives it that like storybook kind of feel and it's slower paced. And one thing that we learned really early on is like toddlers absorb everything very differently than us adults. And so we wanted it to feel at their level again. And that's really important during cognitive development and for sensory stimulation. So we wanted to make sure that we weren't overstimulating kids who may have sensory processing challenges or sensitivities. And so pretty early on, we started working with different educational advisors to come into the room and be part of play sessions and feedback and testing to share their thoughts. And we're really lucky to have some really cool advisors on the team who we can call out to whenever we need to. And we sort of fundamentally decided that because the world is going to be so open-ended and there'll be no right or wrong and obviously no rules and no winning or losing, that we wanted to show somewhat of like the real world. And it might sound a bit ironic because it's an app and not like a real world toy. We wanted to show kids like this is life and there's so much beauty in the everyday. There's so much wonder in like mailing your first letter as a child and putting the stamp on and helping write the address and then going to the mailbox. And that is so satisfying and rewarding for a young person. So we wanted to bring those everyday tasks into PocPoc in toys like town and house. And then we also wanted to show and highlight all of the beautiful diversity that we have around the world. And while PocPoc is definitely developed with some like Western aesthetic, because that's where our team is, we really are trying our best to highlight, you know, people of all walks of life and abilities and family constructs and just making sure that it's like it's an accessible, beautiful, safe toy that we hope, you know, will encourage kids to continue to be themselves and think outside of the box and put the iPad down and go do something else. I mean, actually, we were at a preschool on Friday with the team doing some outdoor play testing for the first time since COVID started. And we used to do this often, but we went back. It was so great to be around the kids again because not everybody on our team has kids. So for those who don't, this is like super exciting. And we saw so many beautiful things of like kids sharing and playing at the same time on one device. We saw something really awesome, which we love to see, which is just a child play with PocPoc and then put the iPad down and go do something else. And to us, that's a mark of success. The fact that they're comfortable stepping away from it without fighting or, you know, really having that sense of addiction, because it's something we try to really carefully design into our toys to make sure that kids don't feel like, oh, just one more try, just one more thing. You know, they can actually just put it down, just like they would stop working on a puzzle maybe and go have dinner and come back to it later. So that's a very long-winded, detailed answer to your question, but it really does, I think, highlight kind of our ethos at PocPoc and why we're sort of obsessed with empowering kids to just do their own thing, because frankly, they know best and we try to listen to them and have them involved as much as we can. And that's why we're really constantly asking for feedback from families, and we use our social media to do that as much as possible and really find out, like, okay, what are your kids asking for? What do they want? How can we make this better? And, you know, everyone's different and they're going to grow, and we want them to grow with PocPoc.
Cool. Well, congratulations again on the Apple Design Award. I mean, Apple, like, I've worked with Apple for many years, and I can tell you that they're very particular about who they'll put up on the pedestal and hand them a little cube with an Apple logo on it. Did you actually get a physical award yet, or have you?
We did. Actually, when you say little cube, I mean,
yeah. I've never actually seen one in person. But
so
yeah.
Heavy. Actually, so it's at Math and Esther's house in Belgium, and rightfully so, as our like creative directors and creators of the original idea. And when it arrived, they did an unboxing, and we're like, oh, it'd be so cute to have the kids in the video, and you know, it'll just be so fun, and the kids would love to be a part of it, because honestly, like, their two boys have designed, I would say, like, a good quarter of PocPoc, and like literally sat in on design meetings on their laps and been like, why isn't this like that? And it's really great. So we wanted them to be there, but then Esther was like, oh my gosh, this thing is so heavy they can't even move it, and it's actually so sharp, like the edges are so pointy. So she had to kind of like very strategically, her and her husband, Matthias, had to like figure out how to film this in a way where like the kids couldn't get too close to the cube, because if they God forbid drop it, I mean, yeah, it's extremely heavy and sharp, but it's in a safe place in their office, and I know that they look at it often. They're very proud, and so are we.
Cool. Yeah, I did a game called Geese Squad once, and I had my friend's kids record the sounds of the geese. One of them said, hey, I'm in a game, like, you know.
That's so cool. Yeah, James, their oldest, who's now just turned 5, he's the little boy at the beginning who says, fuck, fuck, you know, when app opens.
Cool, yeah.
Because the way that he said it, so when we started PocPoc, he was 2, and now he's 5, so he's literally like the CEO of PocPoc. I don't know what I'm even doing, but he said it so many times over the years, and his voice, it couldn't be cuter. And we all knew like we had to have his voice in the app somewhere. And Matt and his wife actually record all of the like fake voices in PocPoc. It's not a real language, of course, but you know, it's very tough to record kids for that kind of thing. But we were like, okay, James will say PocPoc at the beginning. And even now, like, friends of mine will be like, how's PocPoc? And they do the impression of James, because it just like sticks with you. I don't know. I think it's really sweet.
Nice. Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. So to wrap up the show, we have a tradition where we ask some questions. And normally I do it with one person one-on-one, but it'd be interesting to see what you both say. And some of these Ryan's kind of already answered, but so if you're okay with that, I'd like to ask some questions.
Yeah.
They're based on the sort of, they're sort of icebreaker questions, but these ones are based on the work of Marcel Proust, if you're not sure if you're familiar with him. But, and you guys can answer both or either one, that's fine. So first question is, what is your motto?
That's a good one. Personally or for like the company?
Whatever you want to do.
That's a tricky one.
Okay, I'll go while you're thinking, because I have one, but it doesn't really pertain to business. I think, in fact, in business, I'm the opposite. But in my personal world, and my husband would like roll his eyes if he heard me say it again, but it's always leave when the party's hot. So if you're at an event and you're having
like,
the best time, like, it's time to go, basically. Yeah, and I feel there are so many moments in life where just before that peak starts to decline is when it's like appropriate to slide out and pursue something new and pull yourself outside of your comfort zone again and find something new to explore, whether that's like an event or a hobby or whatever. But in work, I'm completely the opposite. I'm like grinding until the very end, like the highs, the lows. It's a different game. But Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah. So I know what one of mine is. I think I have a few of these, and I forgot that I actually started writing down like important quotes that resonate with me this year. I had shoulder surgery, so I had a ton of time on my hands in bed doing nothing. And I decided for whatever reason to just start writing down a few meaningful lines here and there. Some of them are like ideas that I have, and I write down the quotes from myself, but often it's from someone else on a podcast or something like that. But I think what I would go with to answer this question is what's been on my personal blog, like ryancash.net, for 15 years now. And it's actually a quote from the movie Blow, which is, I don't know, maybe a bit weird, but the quote goes, "Life passes most people by while they're making grand plans for it."
Right.
And I think it's really poignant. I'm guilty of it myself, is like, oh, I can't wait in next year, I'm going to go do this, or in 5 years, I'm going to have this or do that or meet this person or whatever. And I think life can pass you by if you don't spend time in the moment. And I'm super, super guilty of it myself, which is probably why it's up there on my blog. And I think when I first put it on my blog in, I don't know, 2008 or nine, it was more as a constant reminder on more of a business side of things, because I knew I wanted to do my own thing, and to stop writing down ideas and telling people my ideas and saying, oh, I have this business idea, and just do it and not look back. And I was fortunate enough to learn that, like, when it comes to financial risk, especially when you're really young and you're in your 20s, you can always recover. Like, all that really matters is your health at that point. So, you know, if you lose $20,000 from something that you try, like, it sucks, don't get me wrong, but you can learn a lot from it, and you'll recover. You can figure out a way around it. And I think something Jordan taught me back when I was working at Mastermind, we carried around a little notepad in our apron for product notes and stuff, but I would always write down ideas on it for new ideas, new businesses and new products and whatever. This is way before the iPhone. And I would always tell Jordan them, and he would say, stop telling me your stupid ideas and pick one. And he said, pick one and do it. It's probably not going to work. And then you can try again. And that's what he had done. Like, he had had a bunch of different websites and stuff when we were in high school. And I learned that, oh, here's another one from, and then I'm going to let you get to your next question. But my other, it's not
the idea.
I
have a few, I'll warn you. Yeah.
That's cool. It's not the idea, it's the execution. And I learned that from experience.
That's my advice to people who want to build apps, is like, whenever they come to me with an app idea, I'm like, you know, yeah, the app idea is great, it's how are you going to build it, right?
Yeah, yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So who are your heroes in real life?
Okay. Melissa, do you want to go first? or do you want?
You go first.
Okay. So I'm going to just pick one person, and it's very cliche. It's probably extra cliche for this show probably, and for everything we've been talking about, but I'm going to pick Steve Jobs. And I think I've read all the books about him, or I guess like the two or three major ones, like the Walter Isaacson one and Becoming Steve Jobs, I guess it's the two. And it's, yeah, everything he did with Apple is incredible. But for me, like, what always sticks out as kind of the most sage advice I've ever gotten is from his Stanford commencement speech that he did. And I just think, like, he's such a model for someone who, like, lived life to the fullest. Although I do think, when I say that, I mean in like a bit more of like a work perspective. And I think when he was nearing the end of his life, he sort of said he wished he had spent more time with his family. So I need to always personally stay reminded of that, because I've definitely had more of a work balance than a work-life balance the last few years. But he's just so inspiring, and I don't know. It's cliche, but I'm going to go with him.
Cool. I have a few, but the one who's been on my mind in the last couple of years, especially while we're making PocPoc, is Sarah Blakely. She's the founder of Spanx. I've never even owned Spanx. Like, I didn't know who she was until I started really, truly putting on some kind of entrepreneurial hat. And she's just built an amazing empire with her company, but she's done it in such a beautiful way that is empowering to women and empowering to just kind of anyone who wants to just bootstrap and work really hard. And I think one of the things I love about her is that she is always on the front lines, like literally in the stores, pulling people over, being like, what are you wearing? You know, how can I help you? And she's not afraid to get her hands dirty. And I have to say, it's something that has given me over the years just a lot of courage to go out and just like literally wear your heart on your sleeve and talk to people and embarrass yourself if you need to, just to get where you want to go in life. Because I learned years ago that no one's just going to hand you anything. You have to go get it. And I think Also, maybe this is a female thing, but it could just be a human thing that, you know, we all tend to have our insecurities and also just be afraid, like, what makes me qualified to do something? And it's something I struggled with very early in my career, but she showed me that it doesn't matter. Like, you just have to try and try really hard and don't be shy. And like, even during COVID, when we ran out of play testers in schools in person, we have like a few hundred families that we work with regularly, but we were finding we were lacking diversity in terms of race. And we really wanted to get more feedback from certain minorities. And so I literally like went out on my, with my iPad onto the streets and started asking families for feedback just right there. And like, when I told the team after that I did that, you're like, how did you just, like went up to strangers? And she was the person I was thinking of when I was doing that and was thinking like, you just have to go for it. Cause if you want something, yeah, you have to make it happen and be kind while you do it too. She's been able to, you know, raise a beautiful family and be a nice person and is really well respected among her peers. And I think that you can be nice and still be successful. So I really like her.
Cool. All right. So what is your most treasured possession?
I have tons, but when I moved from Germany to Canada, I realized pretty quickly, like, what is important. It's really not much. I would say I have this, have a ring from my grandmother that really means a lot to me. She had this is classic her, Ryan, you know, like she had a little Ziploc baggie full of diamonds that she gave me when she was basically on her deathbed and said, do something with these. You know, they were stones from my engagement ring and my mother's engagement ring. And then she passed away and we took all of those diamonds and they were all like weird wonky shapes and didn't really go together and made something really cool out of them. And even though all my friends were like, are you engaged? Like, what is this thing? I was like, no, I'm going to like be in my early 20s and wear this like ridiculous diamond ring. Cause it was like her, it was just so her. And it's kind of like the one thing that I really hold close to my heart. Cause we were really close and she was like the fiercest, kindest person that I knew. So it's important to me.
I'll give you two really quick answers. So one is this kind of very not sentimental, like Melissa just described, and it's my iPhone, but it's not this iPhone. It's not this iPhone in particular. It's the iPhone itself. Like, it really changed my life. Yeah, I would never be doing what I'm doing with my career and my entire life without it. And I think it's transformed the world. I'm also really into photography and it lets me capture the moment, especially with the 12 Pro, like better. Like, I have an SLR, which I love to bring on big trips, but the iPhone is the thing I always have on me no matter what. And so really just for me, it's changed my life. And like, when I watched the Steve Jobs commencement speech, that's kind of why I picked him as well, is if it weren't for this, I have no idea what I would be doing. And then the other thing I would say that's really sentimental or more on the sentimental side is all of the rocks that I've collected on various trips and travels I've been on. I have one sitting on my desk from Chile, but I like to bring back like really interesting and cool rocks from trips that I go on, because I feel like it's much better than like a kitschy souvenir. And it kind of reminds me of like, I stood on that piece of land. And for me, like adventure and travel and having new experiences, that's what it is like having new experiences is probably one of the most important things that I value. And this kind of reminds me of that. So that's my answer.
You're not supposed to take those, right?
I'm just saying. I was going to say, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
After this podcast, you will be arrested.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So which word or phrases do you most overuse?
I know Ryan's. Maybe we should do each other's. Do you know mine, Ryan?
I don't know yours.
Ryan's is what I mean by that. Says it constantly. Really? Oh, yeah.
I didn't know.
And what I mean by that is...
By the way, we can cut anything out of this show, Brian. Just sure. So you know.
No, this cannot be cut.
Keep it in. What's yours? There's a phrase that you use that, like, I think you picked up because you were in Germany and you were speaking English like Germans speak English. But I'm trying to remember what that word is, or it's like a couple words. It's not basically. It's slipping my mind. Maybe it will come to me. Other than that, I got nothing. I don't know.
No, right. I'm sure that I say like much.
I do too, yeah.
All right. So final question. Where would you most like to live?
That's a good one. I ask this to people all the time. I do a three part to this, which is maybe an interesting, it's like, where would you like to go next on a vacation? Where would you like to live for like 3 to 6 months for like a sabbatical? And where would you consider living? So I will give you that answer for the sabbatical. It's like 3 to 6 months in Italy. Where I want to go next is probably back to Iceland for an adventure, and where I could see myself living permanently, other than Toronto, would either be LA or Munich. Just to be close to a lot of the things I value, like mountains and hiking and adventure and nature and like more activities than we have here, like more outdoor kind of activities than we have here. And, you know, for Munich, the ease of getting to other countries so quickly with such different cultures. That's my
also
answer.
You have all my old friends there to steal. That's where
I already stole them. Yeah.
Cool. For me, I would say, I don't know, my husband and I talk this daily because he's German and we're always like looking for the next place to live because we've lived in 4 countries together in 10 years. But I would say, like, gun to my head tomorrow, if I had to move, I would probably go to Vancouver Island, just because I would be between oceans and mountains and I could still be close enough to family and the team and all of that. But I'd be happy to move anywhere anytime. Like, we're very ready.
That's my least friction answer too, of a place that like I can move next week and not have to deal with any like new language or new country, and I don't, just be easy. And it's really nice there.
Yeah, I used to live in BC as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for being on the show. And just before we go, can you tell our listeners and viewers where they can find you and what you're working on next?
Sure. Yeah. So I can't really talk too much about upcoming stuff, but we just launched Alto's Odyssey, The Lost City on Apple Arcade. And we also just released our biggest update yet to Skate City, also on Apple Arcade. We launched a new city, which is Tokyo, in time for the Olympics. And you can check out all of our products and games at builtbysnowman.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Ryan A. Cash. So Ryan A. Cash. Yeah, I think that's it.
Cool. And for me with PocPoc, we actually have a big update coming out tomorrow, which is going to be a big expansion to one of our existing toys. And then next month, we have a brand new toy coming out, which is my favorite one so far. And all of that fun stuff can be found at playpocpoc.com. And then I'm just Melissa Cash _ for Twitter. So it's at Melissa Cash _. Because naturally, if your last name is Cash, all the good names are taken.
I know. We really have to hunt down those clean accounts. Clean names.
Actually, I do have a follow-up question I forgot to ask you during the show. Mm-hmm. But you know, as developers, iOS developers, you know, a lot of us are fascinated by the whole concept of Apple Arcade, but we have no idea. How does one get an app on Apple Arcade?
Yeah, so nowadays the answer is a bit easier for me to say, which is there's a web page somewhere. I don't know what the URL is, but somewhere on the Apple site, or if you probably Google like Apple Arcade, submit a game or something like that, Apple has a page that lets you contact them and submit a game, or to, you know, start that process and get in touch. But I would say, like, if I could give advice, like, just, you know, make sure you have a really solid pitch put together. Just know that you have to be on all of Apple's platforms, iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and Mac. And if you understand, like, if for any existing familiar developers, they probably know what Apple looks for in a lot of ways. But for anyone who doesn't, go check out a whole bunch of Apple Arcade games, see what they're into, and just sort of understand that Apple cares, or try to understand about what Apple cares about to give it your best shot.
So is there a difference in the way that the game is created? Like you did mention, it has to support all 4 platforms or 5.
There's some small like back end things that you just have to do that are like slightly different, just like technical things. But generally, it's the same process as making a regular game for the App Store. The thing with the regular App Store is you have to adhere to the App Store rules. But other than that, like, you can make whatever you want. You can make a short game, a long game, a game with like whatever you want in it. And also, I think there's a bit of a difference with like I don't think you can have any like guns or weapons in an Apple Arcade game, for example. But
yeah, so it's a bit friendly, maybe more, I think.
Family friendly is definitely the way to go. But for Apple Arcade, you have some additional like step that you have to go through as well.
Sure. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. It's been great having you on our premiere episode. So,
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thanks.
And
thanks,
good to meet you as well.
You too. I'll see you guys.
Yeah, we'll see you around Twitter. Toronto.
Yeah, and Toronto. Yeah, sure. We'll actually go and have a physical beer at some place, right?
For sure. Yeah, we'll have to have you by our office in 10 years when it opens.
Cool. Yeah. All right, thanks, guys.
Cool. All right, take care.
Take care, Tim. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.